our own White House correspondent, John Decker, talking about the 80th anniversary of D-Day. It's ironic this is coming up at a time when Columbia students have taken over a building at the university over the whole debate of Israel and the war with Hamas and anti-Semitism on campus, because I kind of know why the GIs and Easy Company and our airborne and our troops went over to Europe and the anniversary of D-Day. But, John, you get to do something that I did only, I've done it a few times, and there's nothing more remarkable than to sit down and interview one of these World War II veterans in their 90s. Take it away, John.
Well, that's right. That's what I'm going to do this morning. I'm in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm going to interview a real hero. He's someone who participated in Operation Oak and at Utah Beach, June 6, 1944. And you're right. Yeah, this is a thrill for me. I don't get an opportunity to meet someone like this, someone who helped save the world, a member of what's been called the greatest generation. And, you know, think about it, 19 years old when he was taking part in that heroic effort in Normandy, France, back in 1944. 80 years later, we will celebrate the 80th anniversary of the D-Day invasion in about 5 weeks in Normandy, France. President Biden will travel over there for that.
Interesting. John, real quickly, because it is germane, what's your take on this measure in Congress, which goes back to define basically anti-Semitism on campus? Are we going to see a split among Democrats between moderates and progressives over this in the House?
Well, this is something that is political in the sense that I think that Republicans are going to be pretty unified in terms of affirming their condemnation of anti-Semitism on college campuses. And we may see a split with the progressives that may be uncomfortable with the language contained in that. I think it's a no-brainer, obviously, Jack. Hate needs to be condemned. Mm-hmm. Anti-Semitism is a form of hate, and it's just vile in terms of what is being heard on these college campuses by people who are attending universities in which they should be taught better, quite frankly.
Yeah,
you know, there's just no excuse for what we're seeing taking place at places like Columbia University,
right,
and USC, which, by the way, I feel so badly for those kids there at USC. Their college commencement has now been canceled. You work 4 years for your college degree, and then it's canceled because of these protests. That's just so unfortunate.
Yeah, and you wonder where they learned it all from those teachers. Thank you, John. John Decker,
thank
our
you.
White House correspondent. Brad Card, I know you have a meeting in a little bit. One of our political analysts on All-Stars, Card and Associates. Brad, real quickly, what's your take on what's going on at Columbia and some of these universities? Because it will get back to Congress. But John Decker, I think, just put it very, very well.
Yeah, I couldn't hear John, but I'll tell you, I really do think that at the end of the day, students have a right to protest. And and let's face it, as much as I don't like it, sometimes they'll protest on stupid things. And that's one of the things that, in my opinion, is fine with this country. I think it's great that people can protest if they want. But for the life of me, when these protests have gone beyond just making a point, right? Now they've almost got a life of their own, and these people are setting up tents. Why on earth does Columbia University allow these tents? Why don't they just take every one of these tents down, and in the meantime, put the sprinklers on in there and drench everybody in there as long as they're there, make life miserable? This is just unacceptable behavior. You can't go on their campus and drop a tent down and just start camping out. So they wouldn't allow that under normal circumstances. Why do they allow this now? It's wrong, and they need to stop. It's just ridiculous. And this is when people say, I kind of hate all this talk about wokeness. A lot of times I think it goes way too far, and mm-hmm. people are looking for political wins when they start talking about it. But this is the epitome. This is what causes, I think, the extreme on the right, the far right, to really go overboard when we start talking about wokeness. And because this is the epitome of wokeness.
Oh, yeah.
It's dumb.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And these people are shouting pro-Hamas things. Hamas is a terrorist organization.
I know.
And we have hostages that are being held, American hostages being held there.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, they're a terrorist organization, Brad, and that's what they're glorifying. And you know what, Brad, I don't want to get into it with you, but you and I probably agree more than not. I've been talking on this show for a couple of years now, long before October 7th, about the anti-American, anti-Western stuff going on at Columbia. So it's not so much about the Middle East as that they just hate this country. Hey, Brad, let's switch.
And it's pervasive within our university system.
I know,
I mean,
I know.
It's all across the country. It's crazy.
I know.
It's insane.
Dan,
and people feel that they have to put up with it.
I don't know.
in the name of the First Amendment, and they don't.
Well, there's a difference between free speech and hate speech, right? And you're right. And, you know, Dan Crenshaw, you probably know him, met him from Texas, the Navy SEAL. He wrote a great book about this, about the stuff on college campuses, and he said it really started about 2012, and we won't get into that. Hey, Brett, this CNN poll about Trump beating Biden, 70% of Americans feel the economy's in poor shape. This is the one that really gets me. More than 60-something percent feel the Biden presidency has been a failure, and the same percentage feel, in hindsight, Trump's presidency first term was a success. 66% disapprove of Biden. But this is CNN, Brad, not Fox.
Yeah, no, Jack, the president is in deep, serious political trouble. There's no question about it. And he's brought it on himself. These are all self-inflicted wounds that he's done. His handling of the southwest border, I said it before, and I believe this, those issues are 1, 2, and 3, because those issues have caused instability in cities. It has caused real angst and quite frankly, has increased the crime across this country. And people know that. And it's all because the president has failed to take action on the southwest border. Mm-hmm. And if he had just done the smallest of things, rather than repeal by executive order everything that President Trump had done, even things that a reasonable person can say were smart and actually made a difference on the southwest border. But because Donald Trump did it, and I'm no fan of Donald Trump, but because Donald Trump did it, they have to get rid of it. It's wrong, and Biden is paying the price for it. And when you factor in Robert Kennedy, I think Biden's in for a bad election day unless he really changes the course of direction of his administration, which I don't see happening.
Yeah. All right, Brad Card, I know you got a meeting. Thank you, Brad Card, Card and Associates.
All right,
catch
Jack,
you tomorrow.
See you.
Aaron Rao, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Jack. Yes. So what we are seeing is that a lot of CEOs, companies across the country, they're bracing for potential protests or demonstrations at the office. However, what we saw at Google, with Google swiftly and unapologetically firing at least 40 employees, 20 of whom protest, another 20 additional that were kind of encouraging or part of this, they were shown the door. And really that sets the tone for how many CEOs are going to react. It gives companies a lot of cover watching Google's response to this campaign by workers. Yep. And the whole idea, Jack, is that you'd be surprised how many people want to go to work just to work. They're not interested in debating your social issues at work.
What a novel concept. What a novel concept.
I was going to say, you know, listen, you're allowed to have your own views, and this is a free country, and you don't want a monolithic workforce, but you can't share your feelings by blocking entrances to work. That's not okay. You can't take over a president of a division's office. That's what they did at Google. And you can't be rude. You can't shame. You can't embarrass. You can't yell. That is unacceptable. It is a total lack of civility, and it's not going to be tolerated in workplaces, at least according to those polled and executive search and HR professionals. They say this is not how it's going to go. And it's very interesting because you see that a lot of these companies, they encourage, you know, you to have your own opinions, and they don't want everyone to think and feel the same. Right. But at the same time, you do that on your free time. You don't do it at the office.
All right. Some companies are waking up. No pun intended. Thank you, Aaron. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio. Good for Google. Joe Guyton and Guyton Group, and they're located. We just had a great guest from Portsmouth, the Pease International Trade Port in Portsmouth. Joe, welcome back with some retirement income planning tips. How are you?
I'm great, Jack. Thank you. It's great to be back.
Well, we touched upon this the last time you were on because it is important. It's something we have to remember. So there's a lot more here, and I thought that maybe we'd continue with some more tips you had because there were too many to get into with our time last time on retirement income planning. Take it away, Joe.
Of course. Thank you. One thing I think we touched on last time is how much money is enough for retirement. And that's something that people really worry about. And it's important for everybody to determine how much money they'll need in retirement. Some experts say people need 70% to 90% of their pre-retirement income to retire comfortably. Others advise people to have 12 times their pre-retirement salary at retirement. And those numbers are arbitrary. There's not a right amount that works for everybody. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's certainly true is that people expect to retire on a larger percentage of their pre-retirement income than they did 20, 30 years ago. And so the amount that you'll need to fund your retirement depends on numerous factors, including your age. Mm-hmm. The younger you are, the more money you'll need, and that's important for people who want to, quote-unquote, retire early, 55, 60, thereabout. Your lifestyle is important. Your monthly expenses are important. And you can assess those monthly expenses by using a cash flow sheet to outline your monthly budget, including your mortgage, your property taxes, dining out, food, payments for entertainment and travel, homeowners insurance, things of that nature. And then also take note of money for special expenses on leisure activities, particularly travel, weddings, hobbies, things like that, because if you're retired, for example, you know, you can often spend more time with your hobbies, whether it be sports, golf, or gardening, things of that nature. And finally, it's essential to create an emergency fund to cover unexpected situations like home repairs and an automobile accident, major medical expenses, helping your kids, things of that nature.
And, you know, all this is even made so important because everything's so darn expensive today, Joe. Everything's expensive. And health care, sometimes those bills you get after a procedure 2 or 3 months later, and they're more than, you know, sort of the flow of a budget. You never know. Joe, there's other stuff. What else?
Also, consider your timeline. Structure your portfolio and your investments based on when you'll need the money, because that timeline helps dictate the risk you should take. For example, if you're a younger 20s, 30s, 40s, just starting out in your career, you generally can tolerate more risk with your investments. But as you get closer, within typically five to 10 years of retirement, you may want to start reviewing your asset base and the assets that you've created to support your retirement, because you might want to start dialing back some of the risk in those, you know, adding investments that can guarantee income, reducing your market exposure, increasing your cash to create a reserve early in retirement. Mm-hmm. And that's really important because there's a phenomena called sequence of returns that refers to the rate of return that the market generates in any given year, and it's something nobody has any control over. It's something that can change very quickly. For example, a couple of years ago, the market was doing great right up until June, and then it headed south the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. So that sequence of return is important, and it can be particularly damaging to your retirement income strategy if there are negative markets in the early years of your retirement. And the way that we offset that risk is by having both guaranteed income streams and also a cash reserve that we can dip into to help us avoid taking money out of the market after it's gone down.
And Joe, I imagine this is more common with more people as they get older, as their savings probably are not enough to carry them through their retirement, right?
Yes, people, again, that's a number one question people ask. Am I going to have enough? And if somebody approaches me and says, Joe, am I going to have enough for retirement? My answer is always the same. I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because if you have you don't have a lot of assets and you have a lot of need for income, you probably don't have enough. And if you have a lot of assets and a relatively modest level of income need, then you probably do have enough. So we always start with that, and then we take a look at that asset base, as I was mentioning a minute ago. But then the next thing we want for people is that they should have a guaranteed income stream. Mm-hmm. So they know they have a regular income flow each month, whether that comes from Social Security, an old-fashioned pension, a rental income from investment properties you own. You're a business owner and you sell that business and there's an installment payment or some kind of a buyout over time, all of those will generate guaranteed income each month regardless of any market deviations. And that's, again, that helps offset that risk of the sequence of returns.
And, you know, Joe, I think you'd agree, Joe Guyton, Guyton Group, Pease International Tradeport in Portsmouth, before we let you go, that, you know, you can plan this stuff, and if you're on a fixed income and a plan, that stays the same. But with everything else so expensive today, everything, whether you're turning around to buy something, go out to dinner, it's just everything's costing more. So I'm hearing from a lot of folks that are 4 or 5 years into their retirement, Jack, everything is costing so much, including housing, that what I thought was what I needed is not what I need. So as we let you go, what else should our listeners consider, Joe, and a last tip?
That impact of inflation over the last few years has been particularly harmful to people. Now, as most people are aware, Social Security payments benefited from that higher inflation because we had some of the highest adjustments to Social Security that we'd seen in decades. But most other income streams, a pension, for example, is not able to be adjusted for inflation. However, rental income can be adjusted for inflation because you can raise rents over time. So it's important to create, not only look at those income streams, but look at your asset base and try to figure out how you're going to offset the impact of inflation. If you have some assets that are in the market that you plan to tap into in 5, 10, 12 years to supplement your retirement later on, you can work on offsetting those higher costs. Mm-hmm. And another way to offset those higher costs is if you have the opportunity and the interest to do it, is to continue to work part-time.
Right.
Because having an income also allows you to offset higher cost of inflation, food, insurance, whatever it happens to be.
Because I also think working is a good thing. Joe Guyton, thank you so much. Pease International Trade Port, Portsmouth, easy to find. Guyton, G-U-I-T-O-N, 766-9200 locally, 766-9200 locally. Thank you, Joe, very much. Wealth of information as always.
Thanks, Jack. Have a great day.
Good Morning, New Hampshire with Jack Heath. Voted best radio talk show. Thanks to you in New Hampshire Magazine's 2024 Reader's Poll. Good Morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Wow, how do you like that? We didn't even plan that. And it's a perfect segue to the editor of New Hampshire Magazine, New Hampshire Business Review, the great one, Mike Cody. Good Tuesday morning, Mike.
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, first Creedence Clearwater Revival and then that great promo. So excellent.
Hey, Mike, I hope you're doing okay. Interesting weather out there, I guess. J-Dog, any update on that 95 car fire over in Northampton?
Still roads closed. So.
Oh, really? The whole lot? Wow.
Mile marker 8.8.
Thank you, J-Doc. And of course, we do have some cloudiness and some showers and some thunder boomers in the central part of the state, I guess, reported. Mike Cody, New Hampshire Business Review, New Hampshire Business Magazine. You know, it was an interesting ski season, and I've seen this trend, Mike, because this is one of your lead stories, and you can amplify, and thanks for being with us. The best snow comes later in the season. I've seen that now for like a decade, especially in the, you know, New Hampshire and Maine ski areas. Unfortunately, this year, ski areas were almost ready to shut down when some of the best snow came, almost in April, but is it giving pause to some of these folks to get their early season pass, their ski passes, earlier discounts to buy for next season? Are they thinking, what's it going to look like?
Well, I think what's important to mention for the ski resorts is that they've gotten so good at making snow and grooming the snow that they have. So even if it doesn't look like it's skiing in your backyard, chances are you can go somewhere where there is some skiing. It's definitely becoming more challenging, and they have to invest more money. But here's what we're dealing with this past season. Now, it's about, 50 degrees out right now? It was 50 degrees on February 10th in the mid-elevation area of Mount Washington. So the story we have from Jill Armstrong in our recent issue that came out Friday, she was covering a ski festival, the Mount Washington Backcountry Ski Festival, and during that festival, on one of the days, there was a talk from a climate scientist from UNH. Her name is Dr. Elizabeth Burakowski, and she just talked about some of the trends. And then the fact that we're even having that during a ski festival tells you where we're at. You know, and this is a problem that, you know, that we have to face. And fortunately, there's a huge demand, a huge pent-up demand for those snow-covered days. You know, as you probably saw, experienced yourself, on the days when we did have snow, the traffic up 93 was crazy because everybody wanted to get out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, each year, one way or the other, the ski industry, the North Country for hospitality and dollars, especially with all the related businesses and the Airbnbs and the businesses and the convenience stores, the hotels, it all comes together at a very big part of our economy. And, of course, ski areas to become profitable, they need people that Christmas week, Martin Luther King Jr. week, they need the public vacations. You need it all, right?
Yeah, I know the big snow came a little too late for some of the resorts. They were already winding down, so the ones that stay open later were able to benefit. I mean, some of my best skiing was in March and April. So I'm sure it was the same for you.
Yeah. What else? Any other trends of interest going on out there, Mike?
Oh, I'm getting ready for the Taco Tour, which is on Thursday in Manchester. That's a big community event, and you know the Chamber works really hard to put that together. It was dormant for a little while during the pandemic. It's come back strong in the last couple of years.
J-Dog, you're a big taco guy. You're usually a Tuesday taco guy, J-Dog. You should go check that out.
Taco Thursday.
Taco Thursday. All right, Mike, I appreciate the time. Any other updates with New Hampshire Magazine, New Hampshire Business Review?
Oh, we have a big June issue coming out, and we'll have our Best of New Hampshire issue coming out in July that mentions your nod for the best morning talk show.
Well, I appreciate it, Mike. Have a great Tuesday. Enjoy. Thank you, Mike Cody.
Thanks a lot, Jack. Take care.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Interesting week, busy week in D.C., Rory, including an anti-Semitism measure coming up, and we'll see how united the Democrats are in support for Israel here, won't we?
That will be on the line, and we did get a statement just a short time ago about a joint Democratic leadership agreement that they will support Mike Johnson if Marjorie Taylor Greene calls a vote on her motion to vacate the chair. So it's significant that the Democrats say they will vote to table any motion or vote on removing Mike Johnson as the speaker. And just a moment ago, Marjorie Taylor Greene responding on X, calling Mike Johnson officially the Democrat speaker of the House.
Mm. Yeah, I saw that, by the way. They're taking a stand, which is kind of bad news for Representative Greene or those that want to go through this charade again of ousting Johnson.
Yeah, it looks like the microphones may not be chasing her around Capitol Hill as much anymore this week after this appears set for defeat.
All right, Roy. Hey, listen, only because you're perched in Florida, what's been going on anti-Semitic activity down there in any of the universities or colleges? How's it being handled? Is it big news down there, or is it all just more looking at Columbia as the epicenter of this and other colleges?
Yeah, it's really just happening at Columbia. There have been a couple of pop-up protests here and there, but especially at the public universities, pretty swift, strict guidelines about zero tolerance, essentially. Like, go ahead and protest, but no overnight encampments, no megaphones, no hate speech at all, and saying, look, at any violation, instant suspension, and it will not be tolerated. So they're allowing protests. We're not seeing much, but within very, very strict parameters.
Thank you, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Going to bring in Barry Glennon now. He does a super, super job, as does his team, heading up the Bureau of Securities Regulation, which I think is under the umbrella, believe it or not. It's a good thing, under the Secretary of State's office. And Barry does a ton of stuff. I brag about his office because I don't know of other states that do this as well as you in terms of informing the consumer of just about everything from legit stuff, the scams. And Barry, we just came out of tax season, and I can't tell you the number of emails still that look like they're from a financial institution asking you if you ordered this. Here's your bank. You're changing your card. Call us. Click here. Oh, my goodness. It's overwhelming. So you always have a great topic. Always great to see you, sir.
Oh, thank you, Jack. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
What's it doing out there, by the way? Is it stops?
Well, it seems to have slowed down. I was heading up 93 north, and it was just almost complete whiteout with rain. It was just crazy.
We had a thunder boom this year. I didn't even know it was forecasted, so here you go.
You see some of the hydroplaning?
Yeah, I actually did hydroplane just a little bit.
It came down quick.
Yeah.
I won't tell anyone.
All right.
No, you don't want, as long as you come out and you're here, good.
Yeah.
All right, what are we talking about today? It's great information to arming the consumer.
Sure. Well, you know, the latest, Jack, you know, we've talked an awful lot about different scams over the years, and I'm happy to announce now that you can now invest using other people's money. That's the deal, although we know it's really not true.
Well, explain that.
Well, this particular scam, which it's really evolving now, the target really is just those with little disposable cash or have limited investing or really no investing experience. And that's really the target for the scammer. And what they're doing is they're offering them access to what they call a proprietary trading platform, which is really just fictitious. There's no such thing. It's a platform that only certain people have, and you're now given the opportunity to be able to get into this platform and make, in using this platform, invest a certain amount, but you're using other people's money. It's designed to lure people with limited experience, and yet they give them access to it, to exchange, trade, I should say, for a small fee. And that's the hook. So it's usually the fee that they're charging is usually small. Could be maybe a couple $100, could be a couple $1,000.
Yeah.
But in exchange for this whole thing, it's a promise that you will get a percentage of the assets or the gains in the investment that's generated. So, and there's always a promise of huge profits, but
it's so overwhelming because on social media, if you like a Instagram or Facebook user, and you'll see a person almost talking about what you just said, they'll basically say, you know, here's a chance for you to invest $25,000 in an Amazon business, and it may be legit. It may be legit for all I know.
Yeah,
you don't have to run it. We set it up for you. But you can make huge profits.
Yeah, you just sit back and take
all
the
of a sudden this money's printed.
Yeah, just not true.
And the other one is, you know, I know you don't get into this much, but I think they're called REITs. You know, REITs, real estate
investments.
Where I think I don't want to, again, they might be great opportunities, but I think one's called REITs. Like you put in $1,000 when they own multiple rental properties, and they promise these great returns. I always think if they're, you know, something too good to be true is usually not true.
You just have to take a look at the commercial real estate market right now in terms of vacancy. COVID, you know, pretty much caused really significant changes there. Vacancy rates way up. But a real estate investment trust, a REIT, it is a legitimate investment, believe it or not. But what people fail to realize when they, first off, it's really intended only for the accredited investor. That is somebody, you know, my definition of an accredited investor
is somebody
who
can
lose it all,
right,
literally.
Right.
But investing in a REIT means that you are going to invest a sizable amount. Usually it's at least a minimum of $100,000. Mm-hmm. And the money is tied up for a significant period of time. And your return is only if the property makes money. So the owner of the property, the investors, you know, the expenses are paid first, marketing fees are paid, you know, maintenance, mm-hmm. you know, all these various vendors associated with the property make their money. If there's a residual, then it comes back to you. And it's not necessarily liquid. If you're into it, say a year or two, you need that money back. Sorry, you may be tied up for at least 5 years.
And you know, Barry, I'm not an investment advisor. We have great folks on the show. We just had Joe Guyton. You, of course, in the Bureau of Securities Regulation, protecting investors and consumers. But I'm not advising anything, so I'm not playing that on my show. So I'm qualifying that.
Yeah.
But you know, if people are doubtful and they want to make a little bit of money, say they have 5 or 10 grand extra or 20, you know, the Fed's not lowering the interest rates anytime soon with inflation. Go down to your local bank where you can see it and talk to them about just a certificate of deposit for 5%.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just saying, your money's not going to go backwards. You're going to make some money. That's a simple way if you don't want to fall for one of these scams.
That's right. And, you know, the Bureau of Securities, we regulate investment advisors, broker-dealers, and as I've said before, the vast majority, you know, 99.9% of them do a terrific job. And I think you can really trust when you're doing business with a broker-dealer or investment advisor here in New Hampshire that they'll do good by you. Where my concern is, and it's not like I'm trying to be a separationist or anything like that, but there are a lot of firms that are out of state that are more than willing to take your money. And, you know, sometimes if you do not have that face-to-face connection with an investment advisor, it's just a telephone call or a message on the internet. You really don't get that same assurance in my book. It's always good to do business locally. I just really feel strongly about that.
Now, are you seeing Barry in your office and tell people, because you have great sites that are easy to get information. In fact, why don't you take your time and give that site out now so people can reference that?
Oh, certainly. Well, the main website is at the Secretary of State's office, sos.nh.gov. Mm-hmm. But we put together a really nice consumer-friendly, consumer-centric website, which is intended to provide the average person, the average investor, with all kinds of information. Even if you are not an investor, investsmart.nh.gov.
That's the site I was talking about.
investsmart.nh.gov. A great site to learn things such as what are some of the questions you want to ask before you do business with an advisor. Yeah. When you have that relationship, what are the questions you should be asking as you go forward with your relationship. All the different types of scams that are out there, including the one that I mentioned here today, as well as all kinds of tools and resources available to the most seasoned or inexperienced investor. It's yeah. really a good site. I would encourage listeners
to
go there.
Yeah, it is. It's excellent. I just had it open. Barry, are you seeing, there's a question I want to ask you in your office. Are you seeing, are these, I'm not talking about some, you know, an investor scammer can be anywhere trying to get people to invest in something. And some are very clever because they'll put together the offering or look legit, whether or not they're registered for it or not. You know, they can sometimes mask it. But are you seeing some of the folks trying to get people to invest money? Are these international scammers? Are they national? Are they out of state? Or do you see some local?
All of the above.
Really?
I think international tends to be more internet-based or by way of telephone, mm-hmm. romance scams, which, you know, but primarily internet, I would say, at least international. There's always a local, you know, fraudster. You know, mm-hmm. fraudsters, in my book, they're nothing but skilled liars, frankly, very manipulative and very convincing. In fact, we've had those who have been the target of an investigation with the Bureau come in, and they really seem quite convincing. They really believe what they say.
Well, you know what I've said over the years in talking to folks in the Attorney General's office in some criminal cases, and I've seen this.
Yeah.
Someone who's really good at not telling the truth, they could pass a polygraph because they somehow convince themselves that they're telling the truth.
That's true.
Even if they're boldface making it up.
Yep.
I mean, murder suspects, well, I didn't kill that person.
Yeah.
Because they might have had someone else do it. I mean, I'm not bringing a panel smart. And they could pass a polygraph.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the skilled liar, really, they're when it comes to investing, they offer up certain incentives. The pitch is that there's guarantees of high return. There's really no risk. There's a shortage that you really need to act now. That's really kind of one of the big red flags. If you ever hear that, you need to sign right now.
Yeah.
That's red flag.
Yeah, it's like they're in taxis. Send the money now because the IRS agents are on the way over to your house right now to arrest you.
Yep. What we're seeing more with social media, and I'm sure everyone here is seeing more and more, are websites and social media posts where you're being encouraged to invest in something that it's just you'll be able to profit like the experts, that here are the secrets to success, to investing success, and just click here to learn more. That's just another one.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking now while you're on live, Barry Glennon, and again, InvestSmartNH.org?
InvestSmart.NH.gov.
Oh, .NH.gov. So we'll do that before we leave one more time. But I'm just looking at my email. I have more than one email for the show and me. I'm looking at my email because usually while we're talking, I get one of those financial institution-looking scam email.
Sure. Yes.
You know, that they're looking for information on this or update your information on this. Click here.
Phishing. Yeah. That's what it is.
And it looks so darn official.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, imagine being in your... You know, I'm just saying, because I think they prey on people who might be older, less online savvy. You know, let's face absolutely. It, J-Dog and younger, it's a generation of growing up with this stuff. But someone who might be 70 years, you know, 75, 78 years old, yeah. you know, they might, most everyone has a cell phone, but they might not be up to speed on things like how to check for phishing stuff or spam or a scam or an email return.
Yeah.
They get scared because they say, your account's in jeopardy, contact us right away. Oh, my goodness, I got to do this. You know, a good person responds to something of concern, but don't do anything where someone tells you to do anything.
Right.
Because that's not how institutions work.
That's right. Jack, you mentioned the IRS, the tax season and all.
Yeah.
What if you receive an email that has the logo of the Internal Revenue Service
right.
saying that, you know, as a result of our review of your return, you now owe X amount of dollars. And it may not be an obscene dollar amount. And that's really the effective fraudster is one who's not going to say you owe $15,000. They're going to say you owe $957, small amount, because that's all they need is to get a number of small amounts. And here's how you can remit your money, always electronically.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're all out there. And you just have to be mindful.
I don't know if I should admit this, but years ago, when I had a different producer at a different network in the morning, I got one of these calls and I saved it. It was recorded. It was one of these people. And it was years ago, so I'm being a little bit, maybe not 100% here, but I'm giving you the gist. It was this guy. Hi, my name is Agent So-and-so, badge number 169, calling on behalf of the Internal Revenue Service in region number 4. Mm. And it sounds very official,
sure
right?
Does. Sure
Want
does.
You to call us back right away. and take action before agents arrive at your location, whatever. Yeah. So the guy put a number there, right? So I delete it. I wrote it down. Yeah. And on a fixed landline, I dial 9-1 the number. And the guy answers.
Really?
And I said, hi, and I'm being hypothetical. Is this Agent Johnson? Yes, it is. Did you get a notice? Yes, I did. You ready to give us your account number? I said, no. This is Agent Hernandez. I just made this up. I'm in your region. I'm actually calling from the federal side of things. Can you identify your badge number? Because right now we have guys on the way to you.
Oh, geez.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. He started swearing. Oh. He started throwing every name in the book, and all I heard was click, click.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Dial
I said, actually, yeah, we are on the other side, and we're coming to you right now because we fixed the vector on your location. He was like hyperventilating.
Yes. You know, you mentioned receiving something on your phone, a telephone message or a text. The one other area that is really emerging, I guarantee you that you have received it on your phone, and that is a message from somebody that you don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just some kind of weird message that, you know, great to have connected with you yesterday, or some message that clearly is intended for somebody else. That's phishing. They want you to respond, to build a relationship. It's the beginning of a romance scam.
And there's a new one I want to just touch upon because it's not necessarily Bureau of Securities Regulation. But by the way, I want to preface this because my producer and I were very careful. I was smart enough not to impersonate anyone on that call to this guy.
Oh.
I just used the term agent, which could have been an insurance agent.
Sure.
I didn't say I was with the – I just said a name and a quadrant and a region. I didn't say anything about anything, and he just – he was quite concerned.
Yep.
Hey, real quick, the other one is someone will send you an email. And it's from someone very close to you. I don't know how they scan your email. So it might be your spouse, could be a buddy, you know, saying, hey, Barry, are we on for golf Saturday? But it will be someone you know, and it will say something like, I'm sure you'll recognize these pictures of these two relatives we lost, or this person passed away, quick here.
It's like, that's it.
And then there's a link for a picture, you know, like see the picture of the person who passed away from our high school. It's a total, like, they get someone you know, and they want you to click it.
Sure, and when you click on that, when you click that link, then it may very well infect your computer, your tablet, your phone.
Everything.
Most likely, your computer.
All right, good stuff, Barry. Best way to learn more on that site for Invest Smart?
InvestSmart.nh.gov.
All right, Barry, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Jack.